Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Today is March the 8th when we're recording here on this Wednesday night. Most of you will hear all of this beginning on Thursday, March 9th, as we head into the Ides of March. I'm your host, Vlad Settler, at Roto-Gut on Twitter, and I'm joined by my oldest friend in the industry, though he doesn't necessarily love the term industry, but this is my oldest friend in the industry. I was at his wedding. He is the person I respect most in fantasy sports in the high stakes community. And his name is Scott Gentstad. What's going on, Scott?
I'm way more offended by oldest than I am industry. So there's the problem there. But everything's going well. We're just fully ramping up into draft season here. We've been doing doing my podcast for a couple months now, so I'm getting going on me. I'm a notoriously slow starter, procrastinator on draft prep. So really into it now. We're in the middle of March, so I'm looking forward to chatting with you tonight.
Yeah, and I think obviously no surprise or not much introduction needed to you. I think most folks that listen to the FTN Fantasy Podcast also listen to your podcast, RotoWire with Jeff Erickson. You guys do fabulous work on Sunday nights. Most people hear it Monday, but recap of Fab and of the week and everything. So looking forward to possibly running into you at the Battle of the Pods. I think we're in the same division. And last year, you guys edged us out by a couple and knocked us out on the way to the Final Four, if I recall correctly.
I'll admit I have not played close attention. Have we been upset yet? Usually we get upset in the second or third round, which is still early there, right?
Yeah, we're getting our first run on Thursday, I believe. All so right. we'll see. At some point we'll meet. But more important things is today, Scott and I, we're going to talk about starting pitching. Last week, Matthew Davis and I at Matty Wood, who happens to be at Disneyland with his family, we discussed the first probably 30 or so pitchers, those that are going in the first top 100 overall. Scott and I are going to do our best to cover the rest of them, so we won't bore you with too many things. Just as far as where you are in the season, as you had mentioned, you're sort of a notorious little starter. Of course, you're a quick picker-upper because at the end of the day, you do draft well and are usually competitive and near the top of the standings. But where are you overall with research? And I'm guessing podcasts and talking to us on the text chain and with people on Twitter kind of gets you more prepped than you would think you'd be, right?
Yeah, doing the podcast we started in, I think, late January has helped me a lot. It's just because every time we do a section of players or a chunk or we pick a segment and do it. So did a lot of research there. That's helped a lot. Actually, prepping for this podcast helped a lot. I just kind of forgot hitters for a few days and started looking at pitchers because we were focusing on that. And I think pitchers after pick 100 are the most important things in the whole draft. I mean, this is where it's funny because if you had a hitter that's not very good, it's like, oh, whatever, he's one of my 14 guys, I could pick up someone else. But now you get a pitcher in this range that turns out badly, it really, really hampers your season. If you have a couple of good aces, you have a pitcher in here that really ruins those. If you have some aces that get hurt, you have a pitcher in here who aren't helping you out, it can really hurt you. On the same regard, it can be huge. Like if you get a pitcher in here that kind of really steps up, it's just huge to have that third or fourth guy that really is, an anchor for you. I did well in the main event last year. I had Tony Gonsolin and Kyle Wright in late in drafts. I mean, it's just such a huge edge when you can have guys that are later in drafts that start every single week. You don't have to worry about, you're not picking up streamers, you're not doing that. So I think that this section of pictures is really who decides who wins and loses leagues.
And obviously you look through all these pitchers, you're getting more comfortable and familiar with it. Last week, Maddie and I had discussed how it was a very unique year as far as late round pitching values with all those guys, the two that you just mentioned with Gonsolin and Kyle Wright, and of course, Christian Javier and Spencer Strider off waivers and Tyler Anderson, the list goes on and on. And to me, I feel like that was sort of a unicorn year in that respect, especially with all the humidors in the ballparks and just pitching up and hitting down in general with everyone pretty much outside of Aaron Judge. And I mean, do you agree that it's just, I personally don't see that. I mean, there will be gems, there will be guys that pop up, maybe even guys not on our radar, but for the most part, I don't think we're going to have such a late round rich laden pitching year as we had last season.
Yeah, I fully agree. There's no way to tell what they're going to do with the ball, but that was a huge factor last year. I mean, like April and May, you could pretty much pick up anybody and they weren't hurting you in ratios. I've watched a couple of spring training games, seen some highlights. The ball looks pretty jumpy to me. Some of that's Florida and Arizona, but I think that I would think that they may introduce something in the ball here to try and make it seem like the the pitch clock and the shift and the new rules, you know, boosted up offense. They really want a little more excitement. I hate when they change the ball. It's just they don't know how to do it very well, and they little tweaks really hamper it. I don't think I'm not planning for like fully 2019, you know, full on juice ball, but I think it's going to be, I think we're going to have a little more offense than we did last year. So yeah, I think that streaming pitchers and finding pitchers late, they're going to be like every week starters for you, and you can wait on pitching. I don't think that's going to be the case this year.
And I did just want to mention about the category targets, because a lot of people are into those and they use them in their drafts, setting basically the 80th percentile for their draft champion NFBCs, the OCs and the main events. And I think, I mean, so this is my first year in many years that I'm not really actively using them. So because I kind of created my own projection system and kind of really working in depth with Russ Prentice on that, I haven't been using RotoLab. I have not input all my projections as I usually do. And what I'm trying to do this year is not rely on those category targets as much, because maybe it's just me, but what I realize is when I'm drafting, I'm almost at the mercy of chasing specific categories, as opposed to being sort of more of a natural drafter as I used to be and just following along in my head. Because I think as you're drafting, you sort of know, okay, I'm going to get 15, 20 from the stolen bases from this guy. I know I'm a little short in whip because of, you know, who I have. So I'm kind of doing it, going back to basics and going a little bit more by feel, but also in tangentially, I want to, if I was to be setting category targets, I feel like I would kind of have my hitting weighted more so to 2021 than I would to 2020, not all the way, but I think a little bit closer to 2021 than 2022.
Yeah, I think that's fair in there. And the category targets is just a weird thing. Like if you stress too much about hitting every single one, you're always going to do some weird stuff. I use mine. I use RotoLab during the draft mostly just to try to check myself. Like if I notice after the eighth round, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just, you know, in especially in the Vegas mains, like there's so much going on. It's hard to like really focus on everything. There's just, you know, it's a real test and focus, those drafts. There's eight or nine drafts going on. There's people talking, there's people coming up to you. You know, you're like the mayor of this whole thing. So you have people coming up to you the entire time. But so it's just one of those things that I think it's more of a check, like make sure you're not way off on it. If I look up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I really don't have any stolen bases, then I got to figure that out. If I don't have any, you know, I'm really low on Ks, and I realize that, you know, maybe I took a couple guys I like for ratios early, but not huge K guys. So I need to do that. So it's more of just keeping me in balance rather than like ever worrying about hitting an actual target.
And by the way, there's nothing like the annual tradition of you sitting in your main event, you're stressing there in the 10th round before we go to break. And, certain Ronnie Moore of Cali Cartel comes up to you. He's already finished. He's at his break. Yep. He's like, yo, you won't believe who I just got in the, hey, check out this. You know, love Ronnie. But
then you get it like, oh, came in the seventh team. Your league took that guy. That's a yuck right there. And you walk away and you're like, oh, I love Ronnie. But yeah, he's definitely the guy that you're like, you look behind, you're like, oh, there's Ronnie. So yeah, there's just a lot going on. I think that people underestimate how difficult the Vegas main drafts are. The best thing we do all year. They're so fun, but they are a lot harder than drafting online. Anybody that'll tell you otherwise is, I think, is full of it. I think it's when you're like at home and you got your ADP, you got your drinks, you got your internet, you got everything lined up. It's just so comfortable. You get that live draft, you know, A, it's uncomfortable. B, there's a lot going on. It's loud. But see, there's something about saying a player's name out loud that just tests you a little bit more. Like it's, if you're going to make a risky, sexy pick, or you may be a guy that way early, it's a lot easier to do online when you don't see anybody reacting. When you know everybody's looking at you and react, it's a little bit pressure filled. It's a fun stress, but there's a different level of stress to it that is definitely online.
And we are about 2 weeks away from heading out there. I'm looking forward to the annual tradition of driving out to your place. And obviously
a little Mad Greek, right?
Yep. Sometimes Mad Greek. Obviously we don't stop by the bad places anymore, like the fast food.
I think we shifted to Mad Greek. It was really good last year, and it's nice to not hit the fast food.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And also I have my own printer. Thankfully, you remember those years where I would print out those, or I'd ask you to, hey, can you print me out my cheat sheet?
You've really moved up in the world these last few years. Your own printer, your own website. You're doing really well here.
Thanks. So let's talk about starting pitchers after 100. Real quick, if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe ftnfantasy.com/MLB. We'll take really good care of you. Everything you need, from projections, rankings, Discord, anything you need, we got you. Promo code FTNPOD gets you 20% off. So
I'm a subscriber, by the way. I can second that.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, of course.
So we're going to talk about the pitchers starting like in the after the first six rounds. So this would be in a 15-teamer, guys going from 90 on. And last week, Matt and I kind of talked about how, you know, these early pitchers, they're really sort of the lifeblood of your fantasy team, how important it is for your ratios to be able to keep them intact, how starting pitching is so important in terms of having depth so that you aren't catching yourself chasing specific categories or bad two-step pitchers throughout the year. You really want to have that nice, strong base. So they're really kind of your lifeblood. Are you in the same boat as far as by the time you're getting into the seventh round, you pretty much have two starting pitchers at this point most times?
I haven't fully formulated that plan yet. Some of that depends on where I pick. And, you know, I'm one that's very much like, I want to sit down at the table and be flexible. And if stuff falls to me, I'm very willing to, you know, trust myself later in the draft to know what I want. But I think this is an interesting year because you could have two, but as we're going to get here, you call them tier four and tier five on the spreadsheet. I mean, I think there's so many names in that tier that if you wanted to sneak through the first six rounds with one and then maybe get like three from these next two tiers, I think it's a really viable strategy. There's a lot of really good names in here. So I think this is a year where you got to make sure you don't go past tier five because it really drops off after that. You got to make sure you get, if you wait, you got to make sure you get three guys in these two tiers. But I think it's a year where you could get one starter and then get three pretty quickly. I'm always one that if you don't get those two, I want to make sure that I get my third better than everybody else. So I'm fine waiting. It really will depend how the draft works out. I probably will have one closer, one reliever through six would be my guess. I'm still big on getting probably four bats in the first six rounds, but then I'm really going to attack these next two tiers. So I'm kind of excited we're talking about these tiers because they're the ones that I'm going to be heavily invested in this year.
So we'll separate sort of the guys between 90 and 150 overall. So this first group, the tier four, we can call them round seven and eight. Guys generally going between 90, 120. I have one guy that gets drafted earlier that I have dropped into this tier, and that's Tristan McKenzie. And outside of that, you've got players in good home parks, basically pitchers, three of them, in fact, from the Seattle Mariners, George Kirby, Robbie Ray, Logan Gilbert. You got obviously the legend himself, Clayton Kershaw in this region, Blake Snell in San Diego, another good home park. And then obviously Hunter Green, not so much in a good park nor on a good team. And who else do we have? That's Luis Severino. So we've got these guys in this range. And then also the fallen injury guy. So Joe Musgrove, who apparently was wearing a shoe and is on his way back. And I guess Tyler Glasnow, although I'm guessing he's probably going later than this. So your first sort of overview of this tier and who stands out to you, both good and bad.
It's an interesting tier because I actually have a couple of targets and a couple of fades in this tier. What do you want me to start with?
Well, I wanted to ask you
positive or negative first.
Yeah, start. Well, first of all, I wanted to mention Blake Snell and Severino. And Blake Snell is somebody since his big season when he was an 18th round pick in main events and basically did win this AL Cy Young that year. Since then, it's kind of really been a rocky road for him. I think we all know the massive K upside, one of the few guys that's basically always going to get you a strikeout rate over 30%, but it's the innings, it's the issue with the control. So between him and then also Luis Severino, who obviously was elite whenever he, you know, back when he was healthy pre-pandemic days, if we can get those two on track and fully healthy, I'm very bullish on the two of them. How do you feel about Blake Snell and Luis Severino?
Probably my two favorite in the range. I'm going to ask you about Kershaw in a second because he's the really tough one here. But I really like Snell this year. I mean, a bounce back year last year. It was 3.38, 1.20 in 120 innings. You know, the K rate's really good every year. It was 32% last year. Again, it was really good. Bumped up the swing strike rate, which I like to see also. The key with him is the walks, and he did drop that. He dropped at 3% last year. Under 10% is really good for him. He dropped his barrel rate. Everything just really got better last year. The durability is the biggest issue. He's topped 130 innings once his entire career. I mean, that's a pretty big number. He's been right around 133 times, but only he had that 180 the year he won the Cy Young, but never been anywhere in between there. You know, the fastball velocity was up. We see a lot of guys go down as they get a little bit older. His actually was up a mile an hour. Phenomenal second half. You look at the second half, 34% K rate, 6.5% walk rate. That is if he ever had the walk rate about 6.5% for an entire year, we're talking about a guy that's going to be in the mid twos. Like, I don't think he'll ever do that K rate wise, but you know, if he ever got there, it's really good. His ADP is about 120, I think you said. So that's like the 8-9 turn. I think he's a pretty big target for me in that range.
Yeah, and I think I've seen him go basically anywhere, even before pick 100 in some cases, and in some of the sharper, higher stakes draft champions. So yeah, I'm interested as well. And for the most part, I mean, if I can get him as an SP3. Hey, listen, that's fantastic. I do think he has SP2 upside, and he's really, you know, it's him and his two teammates, Yu Darvish and Joe Musgrove, I mean, there's no easy answer as to who's going to be the best of those three. And I think really it's going to come down to health and injuries and which of those guys can make 30 plus starts.
Yeah, I mean, for Snell and Severino's the same way. Severino's just an innings thing. I mean, I just but he was really good last year. He missed like almost three full years, and he came back with the ERA in the low threes and a one WHIP. The K rate was kind of everything was kind of close to 12 in 2017. You look at it deeper, and it was really impressive how it was a full bounce back. I mean, it took a while to get there, but velocity's down a little bit, but still throws 96. His ADP's flying up though. I think when we started talking, it was like 115. If you look at the DCs over the last 2 weeks or so, it's up to 100. So I think you and I are not the only people that are bullish on Severino right now.
The trio of Seattle Mariner starters, I think Robbie Ray is gaining a little helium here over the last week or so. He's still the guy I'm least interested in still, just because we saw a little bit of the pullback last year, which I think was expected after the immaculate season that he had in 2021. Obviously pitches in a good home park, but just thinking back to his starts and how inconsistent he was and saw the strikeout rate dip quite a bit. He's okay. I know Logan Gilbert, he basically outperformed all of his expected metrics and peripherals, basically. I mean, just, looking alone at his ERA, that was 3.20, and his expected ERA was a full run higher. Sierra was at 3.84. So he's solid. He's working on a new splitter at drive line. I think he's a nice, solid pitcher, but really sort of an SP3, maybe somebody that could end up with maybe not the most stellar of ratios. And George Kirby, he's really my favorite of the three. I don't spend 200 plus on guys in FAB much as much as I used to, but he's somebody that I had invested in and it ended up working out really well, basically averaging about a strikeout an inning last year over 25 starts. The control was impeccable, a walk rate around 4%. Had a little bit of misfortune with BABIP. It was a 331. I really like him of the three. I think it seems to me like everybody does. But I do think there's even potentially another level that he could unlock, whether that's this year. I think that's still to be determined. Obviously, we'll see. But he is my favorite of those three guys.
So my strongest take on the Seattle pitchers is that I'm a full out on Logan Gilbert. He's a fade for me at the price. His ADP in the last couple of weeks is about 110. I just think if you look at his skills, not just the numbers, I mean, the heavy innings were obviously big. He threw 185 innings, but his skills dropped off from 2021. Hard contact's an issue. He's fifth percentile in hard contact, almost 46%. A lot of hard hit balls. His swing strike rate fell. The K rate fell. The walks went up. Like, everything kind of went the wrong direction. You look at his xERA, he's only 37%, 4.11, so like almost a full run higher than his actual ERA. He does throw hard, but isn't getting a ton of chase. He was like a 12 percentile chase guy. His slider took a step back. There's a lot here that I don't love, and I think that the on the surface, great looking ratios are making people pay up for him. And at pick 110, there are a lot of guys. Like, I would take Snell over him. I'd take Kershaw over him. You can even drop back some other pitchers. I'd take over Gilbert. So I'm out on him. Kirby's really tough for me because he's kind of the battle between the eye test and the stats. You look at the stats, and he's not the guy that blows you away because he doesn't strike out a lot of guys. I mean, 24.5% strikeout rate, good, but not, when they see his elite guys are talking about, he's obviously an elite, elite command guy. His walk rate was 4%. He had a long stretch where he didn't walk more than one guy in a game. That was a really great, for a rookie, that's just rare to see. But, he just doesn't – he has no pitches that are over 22% whiff rate. The fastball is the highest. That's easily his best pitch. He throws six different pitches. I think he needs to develop a second strikeout pitch to really take that next step fantasy-wise. But then I watch him pitch, and the command's great. I love his makeup, so I love everything about him. So he's one for me that I'm struggling figuring out where to slot Kirby at the moment.
And then with Clayton Kershaw, that's a tough one because in draft champion season, the 50-round draft and holds, and just sort of knowing his innings limitations, I had been holding off a little bit. But I've drafted him in two of my last three OCs just because of the upside, because there is potential replacement value and players I can pick up in FAB if I'm diligent enough to take his place. If he does, I'll get one of those phantom ILs little stints, which I think is definitely possible to sort of manage him. But in general, we saw a phenomenal season from him in the ERA of 2.28. He made 22 starts. He was brilliant. Walk rate under 5%. Strikeout rate over 27%. It's your sort of vintage, not vintage Kershaw, but still really good. One interesting note, he has not pitched more than 30 starts in a season, nor 180 innings plus since 2015. So It's really, I mean, if he's, my question to you is, if he is fully healthy and he has no issues, really, aren't the Dodgers just going to limit him anyways? Like, do you see any possibility where Kershaw makes 28 plus starts?
I just don't think he's ever going to be fully healthy because he has a back issue that just doesn't go away. So it's not one of those things like he broke his arm and they fixed it and here we go. I think it's a back issue that you just, it's more of something he has to manage than it is that something that it can come in and out. So I think that, you know, I think if you get 140 innings, that'd be really, really high. That'd be a great season. But I think probably 125, 130 is where I go. It's just, you said he wasn't vintage, but like he wasn't that far off last year. He was really, really, really good. You look at his stat catch page, it's like dark red circles all over that freaking thing. You know, all the stuff looks great. You know, the curveball is still crazy elite, 44% whiff rate on that pitch. It's just a matter of how many innings you think you get. It's a back issue. Like he could miss 2 months at any time. He's one of those guys that he's great to watch, except every time he, you know, moves weird or tweaks something or a pitch goes down 2 miles an hour, you're like, oh, here we go. So that's just, it's kind of hard to, it's hard to own in your fantasy teams, but man, he's just as he was so much better last year than he was in 2021. And probably the best he's been since, I guess 2020 was a short season, but the best he's been a full season since probably 2016 or 2017. So I wouldn't go that far off vintage. I just, it's hard to pull the trigger knowing you only get 125 innings.
And obviously lots of run support and potential for wins when he does come in. And just a quick note on the schedule. I mean, it starts off nicely. He'll will 100% be the opening day starter so long as he's healthy. And that'll be Thursday, March the 30th. And basically that's at home against Arizona. And if things line up right for him, he'll either then get a two-start week with a home Colorado Rocky, road Arizona, or Colorado, or basically the following week would be with like at San Francisco and then home Chicago. So either way, the schedule kind of lines up nicely. I know that's not something that should influence our drafting per se, but if you get a nice start out of your number three starter and get some gems, you're off to off and running to a good start.
Aside from the opening day combo meal from Corbin Carroll, that sounds like a pretty good stretch.
Very possible. That's that's going to be a very interesting lineup, Arizona this season.
Where are you with the other guy in this list, Hunter Green, who's like super sexy, throws 102 miles an hour, most pitches over 100 miles an hour. Where are you with Hunter Green? Because he was awesome in the second half of the year last year, too.
I just I haven't been drafting him, to be honest. He's just somebody where I think you know that I get a little bit a little stingy with the ratios, and I really, you know, I don't want to draft a guy as my potential two or three that even with the strikeouts that could potentially land me in some hot water, like have some difficult starts at home or just things don't go right for him. And I get kind of worked, you know, like get Berrios'd essentially. And that's kind of what I'm scared of. And so I'd rather not, I'm taking risks throughout the draft in other ways. And I'd rather have nice solid ratios early on and maybe take shots with guys that can provide me strikeouts or maybe stream them at some point throughout the year. But for whatever reason, no matter how great he is, and I can end up eating my words, but I just have not been in on the Hunter Green market this season.
Yeah, 31% strikeout rate. I mean, it's a huge number. In the last 35 innings, it was 37%. The big thing that I'm scared about is obviously pitches in, you know, Great American Ballpark, which is a huge home run park. But the problem with him is, and the opposite, we'll get another pitcher we'll talk about in a bit that I do like there. He has a 48.5% fly ball rate last year. And then you just get that many fly balls in a place like that. His barrel rate was 16th percentile last year. There are going to be big blow-up games. You know, you put a couple of guys on base, you get up a three-run homer, and all of a sudden you're in trouble here. I just think the combination of fly ball rate and barrels with Green in that ballpark just scares the crap out of me. I probably just won't end up with them for that reason.
All right, let's jump into the next tier because this is a lot more of a fun one, and this is basically your rounds 9 through 11 in 15-team drafts. You're talking around 120 to 165 overall, give or take, tier 5. And so running through a few names is your local favorite, or at least from near your team in Oakland, but Logan Webb, you've got Nick Lodolo, Hunter.
That was a big stretch. Right?
I really stretched that one out. A couple of Atlanta guys, Kyle Wright and Charlie Morton. You got Jesus Luzardo in Miami and Pablo Lopez in Minnesota. You got the two Tampa Bay guys, Jeffrey Springs and Drew Rasmussen. You got Jordan Montgomery. Nestor Cortez, Freddie Peralta, a long list of these guys. But I wanted to ask you, I guess, first of all, where are you with the Atlanta pitchers? Charlie Morton, Kyle Wright, any of those guys interest you? How would you rank them as in terms of compared to one another?
That's a good question, because one is one I'm a full in on, and one I'm a pretty much a full out on. So I'm actually in on Kyle Wright. Big breakout last year. Obviously, the 21 wins was huge for people, but I like everything we saw. I mean, his strikeout rate was up, and the key thing that he struggled with in the majors in his first couple, you know, times up was the walk rate, and he cut that almost in half. It was more in line with his minor league numbers. The thing last year was like, if he can just get the walk rate down to his minor league numbers, he's gonna be fine here. I love the ground balls. You know, goes well with the good strikeout rate. It's not a huge one, but you get a ton of ground balls, a good strikeout rate, swing strike rate's pretty good. A little too much hard contact, but he's got a great curveball, throws four pitches. I love the makeup. His changeup's great also. I just love everything about Kyle Wright. I watched him a lot last year. I owned him in the Vane event, and I liked everything I saw. I feel like ADP's in the – I mean, I have to look at the newest one, but the ADP is like somewhere in the 140s, somewhere in there. 152 the last couple of weeks. I think that's too cheap. I think that he really stepped up, and it was real to me. So I do like that. I'm out on Charlie Morton. I know the strikeouts are really good. He's got a really stable strikeout rate, over 28%, but he's 39 now. And you look at a few things to pop up last year. The walks were a little bit up. The home runs were a big issue. His home run rate almost doubled to about 1.5 home runs per 9. Barrel rate doubled. Hard hit rate was up 10%. Both the under 20th percentile in hard hit and barrel. Ground ball fell 8%. There's enough here that like, maybe it was just a blip year and a couple things went sideways. But at 39, I'm kind of buying the fact maybe he's not exactly the same guy. You know, the curveball is still great, but the four-seamer got hit really hard. The whiff rate fell on that. ADP is him is about a little bit after right, like 3 or 4 picks after right. He's like 155. I think his age, I'm out at the price on Charlie Morton this year.
Yeah, so those two have been going in opposite directions because obviously Kyle Wright had a little bit of that shoulder scare. Looks like he's okay. He's going to be on track. But I had been drafting him in Draft Champions early on and not so much Charlie Morton. Now the two have sort of they've changed as far as kind of helium and ADP, and Kyle Wright's already kind of the less interesting one because he does not have Charlie Morton's sort of big strikeout rate. So despite the fact that I've been drafting Morton and been interested, I have pulled back a little bit, and it's really nothing more than just a little bit of concern, just the fact that maybe there were some things about last season and his decline that were real, and the fact that he's almost 40 years old, and granted, he'll get a ton of run support. He should continue to strike out at a high rate. But yeah, I mean, there are just some worries that his inconsistencies last season translate to this year. Granted, he wasn't fully healthy last year, but I mean, hey, at this age, I think injuries can always pop up. So I'm a little concerned, but I think either way, you're looking at two guys that should, if they do gather 28 plus starts, probably are going to be up there in among the wins leaders in the National League.
Yeah, that offense can hit a little bit.
What about Lizardo? Jesus Lizardo. I know you know him well. You're extremely critical of your A's and your former A's, and I think you remember well how I've been kind of waiting for that big Lizardo breakout, that monster breakout to emerge, and we saw a little bit of it last year. I mean, obviously, I think we saw how fantastic he was last year. Are you buying in on what you saw? Do you think he can garner 150 plus innings this year, keep an ERA around 3, and just dominate this year? Is he worth the price?
Yeah, I think he's worth the price. I mean, I was waiting for this as an A's fan. I was waiting for it at some point, either in the bullpen or the starter. It just never happened. It just didn't work. And you know, of course, he leaves, and he right away he has his best year. K rate was easily his best as a starter. You know, he had a high K rate early on when he was a reliever when he came up with the A's. But 30%, the walk rate is still a bit high, but he dropped that down. You know, if he dropped that a little bit more, is the really the step he needs to take to be really, really good. He had a low BABIP last year, so that helped him a little bit. So that helped the ERA. But everything's good. I mean, he throws 4 pitches over 18% of the time. The slider is just filthy. 30% usage there, a 41% whiff rate. It's just nasty. The changeup is nasty too. It's always been his go-to pitch to get a punch out. 45% whiff rate there. You get 2 elite strikeout pitches to go with a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. And then the fact that he has a 40% ground ball rate on top of that, like everything is there. It's just a matter of him staying healthy. If he can get to 140 innings, I think he smokes this draft price pretty well.
Yeah, and the one thing I like to see out of him last season is less blow up. So he was rather consistent throughout the year, and he made 18 starts, and 13 of those he basically gave up two runs or less, and only allowed four runs in a game once. So pretty impressive. And he also was rather durable in 11 of those 18 starts. He went at least six innings. So ballpark, it works well. I think the offense is a little better, so I'm interested there in Jesus Luzardo. Logan Webb. He's one of those guys that I almost instinctively kind of knocked down a little bit. And I think it is because of the team context and the fact that I think the Giants are just going to unfortunately stink the season. Well, not unfortunately for me as a Dodger fan, but so maybe perhaps lower run support. Him as a pitcher, he's excellent. I feel like he's one of those better real life guys than fantasy guys. Basically an above average walk rate, barrel rate. 5.5% walk rate, around 6% over the last couple of seasons. It's just that strikeout rate around 21% over the last couple of years, and the context, the team context. So for me, I just haven't been drafting him. I'm sure he'll be just fine, but just nobody that I'm going out of my way for, considering the alternatives in this range.
Yeah, I think you said it best there. It's not an anti-Logan Webb thing. It's just I like guys in the range better. I do worry about – it's not the strikeouts, but it's just how far they dipped last year. You're talking from 26.5%, 20.5%. His velocity dropped by a mile an hour. He didn't really have a lot to give velocity-wise anyway. He's kind of on that edge. You know, he was 93. Now he's down to 92. But, you know, solid command guy. I like his makeup. I just – swing strike rate fell also. I just think that I find myself – in this range, a lot of guys I really like, and if I'm going to have someone I'm kind of neutral on, I probably just won't end up with him unless he slips and drafts.
Am I being hopelessly optimistic with Freddie Peralta? Because I'm a big fan. My VDP has him quite a nice little number, at least low double digits over his current ADP, and just a guy that everyone seems to be scared of. I mean, everybody seems to be, not everyone, don't want to speak for everyone, but a lot of folks concerned with the shoulder, even people from Milwaukee, fans of the Brewers, people close to the team, especially very concerned about Freddie Peralta's durability, the ability to basically last and pitch a full season. He's obviously good when he does pitch. I mean, last season he was a borderline SP1, being drafted at the round 3-4 turn, and then had that big blow up to start the year. He gave up 9 earned runs in his first start of the year. Then went on a nice little 5-game tear, and then had a shoulder strain, out for 2.5 months. When he came back, we saw the old Peralta, the one that we've been used to. He basically maintained a whip under 1 and ERA under 3, and saw a hefty decrease in his strikeout rate, which is obviously not the good thing, but he seems healthy for the start of camp. It's a good home park for him. The offense is decent. I think he's a great pitcher. He's obviously not one of those guys that's going to go out there and pitch 7 innings. But I like him, and I might be just a little bit overly optimistic. I think he's a better pick for like an OC or even a main event than he is a draft champions. But where are you with Freddie Peralta?
One of my favorite pitchers to watch. I was a big target on him last year, and I kind of got lucky that he just went before my picks in a couple drafts. But I love the pitcher. I'm a little bit worried about the innings too. Anytime you get that kind of injury, he missed 2.5 months last year. And you mentioned came back and was good, but unfortunately, it's probably for someone else's team because he probably dropped him. But I like the ground ball rate went up last year. But the key thing with him is just how much he limits hard contact. He just 31% hard hit rate the last couple of years is a really elite number. You look at his Statcast page, crazy red everywhere. All his like X metrics are above 90th percentile. I love the pitcher. How many innings do you think he goes? I mean, because that's really the question here. For the ADP, he is a better pitcher than his ADP number. It's a matter of how many innings he gets, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I had him for 155. That's where I'm at right now.
If he does 155, he is one of the absolute best values in this draft. I mean, his ADP is about 150. You're talking like the 10-11 turn. I think if he gets to 120, 125, he's worth it. If he gets to 155, he's going to be really nasty because he's good when he pitches. I don't think that's going to be a question here at all. I mean, even last year, you mentioned the blow up early on in the year, still ended the year with a 1.04 whip. Year before, the whip was under 1. The year before, ERA was it was just a 30 innings in 2020. But I think when he's on the mound, he'll be really good. It's just a matter of how many innings he can amass. And if he gets up anywhere near that number, he'll give me really, really good.
And also, it's he's somebody that you keep in mind with a specific type of roster construction. So yeah. if
It's a good point.
You've taken a Jacob deGrom, and then all of a sudden you waited a little bit. You got a reliever. You pounded the hitters those first few rounds, and all of a sudden you, man, I need to grab two pitchers here. Grabbing Clayton Kershaw and Freddie Peralta along with your deGrom is probably not a good move. But yeah, definitely, you know, keep an eye on those type of things.
That's a really good point. I mean, it so much depends on who you have when you're drafting. And the key is to be as flexible as possible. Know the player pool and know all the pockets where you like guys. So you know that, you know, based on who you've taken so far, it really impacts who you're going to take moving forward.
So I like the White Sox to bounce back. I think the got to get rid of that the bad juju with Tony La Russa. And I think they move on. I like the pitching staff. Again, I'll give a plug that our CEO Kevin Adams, his cousin, is the pitching coach of the White Sox, Ethan Katz, and nice. Hopefully works well with these guys. But I'm still squeamish and just not into Lucas Giolito. I feel like last season I got lucky because he wasn't a target for me, so he did not get to hurt me. I did get to avoid the Giolito and the Berrios blowups. But I think it's probably a fair price for him. But there's just something about a guy that is never producing really elite ratios, at least as far as ERA. He's never a guy that you can count on to give you an ERA that's going to be helpful. It's really going to be like sort of league average or below average as far as like the aces or the best pitchers are concerned. High walk rate usually, and had that high home run rate as well last year, 1.36 homers per nine. I'm not really into Giolito. I kind of like his teammate Lance Lynn a little bit more, just a guy that's been consistent when healthy. We saw him have a nice run after he came back last season, basically posted a sub 4% walk rate, a super low bail rate around 5%, hard hit rate 33%. So I don't think I'm going out of my way for either of these guys. Both will probably rise along with the tide of the rest of the starting pitchers come main event season. But if I had to pick one, it would probably be Lance Lynn for me.
Giolito is, I love last year's bums normally, but he might be the victim of, I like too many guys in this range. So I thought I'd be more in on him, but just so many pitchers around him I like, but it's a weird like leap of faith, right? Because the guy was really, really good for three straight years. I mean, he's really good in 2019, 2020 and 2021. Then out of nowhere in a year that he got pushed way up in our draft, he was going early second round in the main event last year. And he was one of those guys that like was the helium guy. Casey Cha took him in all leagues. And I think that made him even more helium. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, Casey's taking him. I got to do it too. You know, everything was just a little bit worse last year. The K rate dropped, the swing and strike rate dropped, you know, BABIP was up 70 points, which is a key number. I mean, he's not gonna have a 340 BABIP again. So that in itself, I mean, look at his FIP, it was 4.06. So almost a run less than the ERA. So I could talk myself into it. But I just think of the fact that there's so many guys in this range I like more that I probably won't end up with them. But I think it's a very calculated risk, and one that, you know, when you get someone that's that good for 3 years in a row, and you kind of flip his stat cast base from 2022 to 2021, you see just how crazy a drop off it was. He lost a lot of weight. He's in much better shape. Apparently, he said he was in terrible shape last year. You could tell he looked skinnier in camp. You know, who knows if that helps him or not. I think it would have to based on everything he said. I think it's a calculated risk. It's one of those things that if I have a team that I feel like, you know what, I need someone that's going to be an elite, you know, potentially a top 20 pitcher here, I might take that risk, but it has to be the right team build. I probably won't end up with them because I like all the guys around him so much.
A couple more guys before we move on to the next tier, because we do want to cover as many, go as deep as we possibly can. But Chris Sale, the helium is rising. This is a case of a guy that I think could easily end up being a top, like a sixth round pick and going in the top 90 if he continues to look good. Where are you with Chris Sale? Are you buying in what you're seeing this season? Are you waiting for those for the good old days, the glory days of Chris Sale to come back? Or are you biased already?
Yeah, I'm not. I think the point you made is perfect. I think that if he keeps pitching well in spring, he's going to move up probably to the point where I won't take him. I think I would I'd entertain it here with the right team build. ADP is about 150 over the last 2 weeks, 146. So I'd probably start to think about it at that point, but I think you're right. I think he's going to end up in the top 100, and there's probably just going to be someone in the league. Every league I'm in is going to like him more than me. I think it's where it's going to fall out. But yeah, I mean, if he comes back to those vintage days, it's an elite, you know, a top 20 kind of pitcher. But you know, even if you look at his last year that he was healthy, it was a 2019, 147 innings. Granted, that was a juice ball year, but you know, the ERA was still 4.4 that year, but all the metrics are so good. If he's anywhere near the same guy, he'll be really good. I just have no clue how many innings you get. He's thrown 48 major league innings in the last three seasons. I have no idea where to land on him. If he's going to get heliumed out of my price range, I think.
And if you look at the online championships, the 12 teamers with the $150,000 top heavy prize, where people do draft a little bit more, a little less risk averse, I guess, whatever the opposite is. But Chris Sale has a min pick over the last couple of weeks of 98 and an ADP 20 higher. So he's around 130. So yeah, we're already kind of seeing that in the OCs. And I think that's probably a little bit more reflective than, the safer, where your roster's locked for the whole season, draft champions ADP. So it might be time for us to start sort of in preparation for main event, turning the corner and look at in the OC ADP.
Yeah, someone with one pitcher is going to be in the sixth round and be like, ah, man, I really need help here. I'm going to get up because Sale. I just think it's going to happen in almost every draft. He'll go top 100. Mm-hmm.
And before we head out of this tier, talk to me about the two Tampa Bay guys, because I've seen some, Drew Rasmussen or Jeffrey Springs. And you know, of course, the first thing that pops in my head is the why not both, Jeff? but I mean, I like them both. You're getting kind of different things, right? I mean, Drew Rasmussen feels like the safer ratio guy, but if you're looking at just last year's sample, is he really? I mean, Jeffrey Springs was pretty solid ratio wise. You're obviously getting more upside in terms of strikeout and punch out ability there from Jeffrey Springs. Maybe a little bit more concerned with the innings and limitations, since he is a reliever turned starter, but had that, you know, kind of fully ramped up last season and pitched really well. How do you feel about these two? I'm personally like them both. I like both. I'm into them. I don't think there's all that much difference with them. And I think they might even come in close to one another in the season as far as end of year value. And I think they both can return a profit for us.
Yeah, I really like both too. I always worry about usage with Tampa Bay pitchers. You know, they just like to get guys out after the second time through the lineup. But I think I prefer Rasmussen a little bit. 146 innings last year, 284, 104, really good ratios. I like the low walks. He's a 5.5% walk guy. I think the strikeouts are actually going to bump up this year. His striking strike rate went up last year as K's went down. I think that's going to regulate a little bit. So I think he'd go back to a 24 to 25% strikeout guy. His stuff is really good. I really like Rasmussen a lot. Big ground ball guy too. I like guys that combo Ks and ground balls. Just always hard to get yourself in a lot of trouble if you do both things. You put the limiting walks on top of that. I think Rasmussen's a definite target for me where he goes.
So now looking into the next tier, tier six, so to speak, rounds 12 to 14, guys going around 165 to 225. It's a big chunk of guys here. I think there's some guys that can cross over into these tiers. And some of the guys going in this tier specifically are going to be drafted higher. They're essentially going to be going in the next tier in main event. So I'm talking about guys like Dustin May, Grayson Rodriguez, Kode Senga, maybe Brady Singer if he continues to do well. Same thing with the rookie Hunter Brown in Houston. Reed Detmers has been getting some helium as well. He's moved into the top 200 quite easily. And then, of course, Andrew Heaney for the Rangers, who is always a guy that we know has never really reached that prospect potential, that first-round potential. We saw a glimpse of it last season with the Dodgers. Some might see it was a little bit lucky and that it would probably all unravel if he had a full season. But hey, it also could have gone Tyler Anderson style. We really do not know. So a lot of upside, I think, with Andrew Heaney, but obviously a lot of downside as well. Talk to me about the guys in this tier. Who stands out for you? Who do you want to talk about first?
Big question for you first. Do you agree with me that there's a pretty big drop-off between the two tiers that we discussed now in this one? Because I feel like this is a key thing to know in draft, to know where the drop-offs are. And it feels like to me like this is exactly where it is. There's a definite difference between the guys we just talked about and the guys we're about to talk about.
Yes, and in most of my drafts, it is making it feel like a little pitcher heavy, but I think at this point, I usually want to have three or four starting pitchers and a reliever.
Just hammer some hitters in this range, right?
Yes, this is a good range to hammer hitters, and guys where the question marks start to be, I guess, even bigger question marks, right? Like So, I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, so the guy I like, and I think he might have just dropped out of this range a little bit. I'm going to put him in here. You had him in here on our list. I really like Alex Cobb right now. His ADP's dropped a little bit. It's about 220, so kind of right in this range. He threw his most innings since 2018 with 150 last year. Really good, solid ratios. The whip was too high, but the ERA was good at 3.7. The K rate's stable. It was always his issue with the K rate in the past, and now it's 24% last year. So I think that's stabilized pretty well. Swing strike rate fell a little bit, but still over 10%. But he could have been better is the key. His BABIP was 337. His left on base percentage was 68%. So could have been better in both ranges there. His FIP was actually under 3. I love he's an elite ground ball guy, 61.5% last year. Pitches in a really good place in San Francisco. The velo is up 2 miles an hour. I think we're going to see a step up from Alex Cobb this year. He's a 96th percentile barrel rate guy. You get that combination with the ground balls and the new stabilized strikeout rate. He's a big target for me at his ADP, and he's probably my favorite guy in this range, believe it or not.
Yeah, Alex Cobb was a big target for me last year, and I think for a lot of folks as well, because we did see that sort of late career velocity spike. I mean, This is a guy that was throwing 90, 92, all of a sudden was at 94, 95, and we were waiting for the other shoe to drop all season long. I mean, this is literally the unluckiest starting pitcher in baseball last year. And of course, you know, getting trolled, kept waiting for those good starts, and they just never came around. So maybe some of that comes around this season. But man, I think you mentioned it, a career worst BABIP, 337 is insane. Just a huge differential in his estimators, which basically an XFIP under 3, where his ERA was basically closer to 4. Is there really that much difference between him and Logan Webb? And you actually are getting probably more strikeouts out of Alex Cobb than you are from Logan Webb. So I'm on board too. And the price is reasonable. I don't think he's necessarily a guy that's going to pounce all that much. I did want to ask you about Sonny Gray, because he is somebody that I seem to have a little bit of a bias for. I've always kind of been a sucker for him. And I try not to let sort of past successes or things working out for me in the past affect my projections and prognostications of the future. But I think he's another guy. I kind of almost put him in that same bucket with Cobb, even though they are different pitchers. But I don't really know what Sonny is going to come to the surface this year, but he's somebody that I've been interested in. And I like Sonny Gray. What do you think?
I'm one that has a lot of Sonny Gray almost every year. And I think the ADP is about right now, but I'm a little concerned. There's some trends that are going the wrong direction. His K rate dropped for the third straight year. It's gone down 3% each of the last 3 years. Swinging strike rate is under 10% for the first time since 2016 when he was on my A's. His whiff and chase rate were both under the 20th percentile last year. I just see a little bit of trending the wrong way. I think he'll still be solid, but I think maybe the upside's a little bit capped. And then you get the innings pitch in there too. Like you always know he's going to have a couple of tweaks here and there. Slider whiff rate dropped 10%. It just seems like a little bit, everything was kind of taking a step backwards last year. At age 33, I'm always in on Gray. Last year was really good when he pitched. I'm a little more worried than I normally am. So I kind of would put him more in the neutral range. Like if he's here, he's a guy that I'll consider. He's not a fade by any means, but not as much of a target as he normally is for me.
And how much does defense play a part? Like it changes that have been made to a team that have maybe strengthened or their defense has gotten worse as far as maybe getting some good fortune and some good bounces with the ratios. Like has anything changed for you here in this situation? Obviously they're getting Correa back, full season of Polanco. They got a kind of different looking outfield here, but do you consider that at all? And just in general for this group, because let's not forget Tyler Molly is healthy and he's starting to creep up into this group as well.
Yeah. I think it matters for me for ground ball guys. Like if I have a guy who gets a ton of ground balls, I think it really matters. You see that. I think there was a year that was frustrating with Gray, had Eugenio Suarez butching balls on the left side of the infield. And it got frustrating, but I think, with Correa there it's a big factor for Gray. He was about a 45% ground ball guy last year and it's dropped a little bit, but he's always really good ground ball by. So the guys for me that I think the BABIP is really influenced by how good the infield defense is. So for me, it's infield defense and the ground ballers. I tend to kind of tweak ratings a little bit.
And then I had mentioned in the beginning of this group about Andrew Heaney. What do you think is his possibility? Like, let's talk about just the Rangers staff as a whole. What are the possibilities that all of these guys stay healthy? We're already seeing some issues with Nathan Uvalde. I think we saw Jacob DeGrom throw 55 pitches in a simulation. He looked fine. But where are you with Heaney and just this staff in general? Because obviously they're paramount for this team to actually be able to have a chance to compete in this division, in a division that I think is going to be very difficult to compete in outside of maybe the Oakland A's.
There was no reason for that last shot there at the end.
Sorry.
The A's are going to be so bad. They're a disgusting franchise. They spent a lot of money. Heaney is a wild guy. Like he's the most extreme pitcher I think I look at. Cause you look at the strikeouts were huge last year. The swing strike rate was huge last year, 16.8%. Like that's a huge number for a starter, 35.5% strikeout rate. He dropped the walk rate. And then you scroll over and you look at how much hard contact he gives up. He is first percentile in the majors in hard hit percentage. First. That is like the absolute worst. Second percentage in average exit velocity, fourth percent in barrel. So yeah, he gets a lot of swings and misses, but man, he gives up a lot of rockets. And that always scares me. Kind of the old school Robbie Ray issue that I always had with Robbie Ray. And there were years where he blew up. And then there was the year he was dominant. So you can get those big years. I still worry about guys who give up that much hard contact. I know that that can move around a little bit, but man, he gave up a lot of rockets last year. I'm probably not going to take Andrew Heaney. And I may pay for it with the strikeouts, but there's just enough. I think there's going to be too many blowups for me.
All right, we've got another tier. Before we jump into the next guys, I wanted to ask you about Dustin May, one of my clear fades. I mean, just simply from day one, because of the actually known innings limitations he's going to have, and how little he has pitched over the last few years, and how I just can't get it. Even if those innings are going to be great, like there are just way too many other pitchers that I'm interested in who I think can potentially throw 180 plus innings and not be that far off from him ratio wise, that for me, there's just no way that I am touching or plan on touching Dustin May at that price.
It bums me out, but I probably agree. I just love watching the guy pitch. He's so fun to watch. The stuff is so nasty. He hasn't really translated to strikeouts yet in the majors. You know, that one quick year in 2021, he looked awesome and then he got hurt. But he's thrown 53 innings in the majors the last 2 years. They're going to have to limit the Dodgers. Dodgers are really, they play into that. They were very careful with Urias for many years. You got to think that May, like 120 would be like a really big innings count for him right now. And that's just really tough to take in this range. I mean, I like the stuff. I like watching him. I think the strikeouts are going to come at some point. Swinging strikeout rate's 13%. I just think that the innings are going to be too low in this range, unfortunately.
Real quick, I wanted to make sure that people could take advantage of our free 3-day trial at FTN Bets. You basically get complete access to our FTN Bets Diamond Package. It includes player prop projections, betting models, betting calculators, articles, videos, podcasts, and betting picks for all the sports, everything down to tennis, NASCAR, UFC, and of course, all the major ones. So with March Madness, it's right around the corner, MLB and PGA, NBA seasons, everything's heating up. Now's the best time to join. You can do it so free. So just click at ftnbets.com/free and take advantage of our free 3-day trial as an Elite Diamond Package member. Again, ftnbets.com/free. Tier 7, some sexy names. You know what stands out to me real quick is how much Razzball, Gray Albright, guy that we know and love, he loves Grayson Rodriguez. I mean, everyone loves Grayson Rodriguez. He's going to be a phenomenal pitcher, most likely an all-star. But there's a little bit of the similar to Dustin May, right? As far as innings limitations, like how many innings is Grayson Rodriguez going to pitch, and at what price is too much for you to get in on?
The dude is absolutely filthy. I've seen great tweet about him too, that he thinks he's like 100 picks too late. He loves him. I think the biggest problem with Rodriguez is not going to be maybe the innings count. It's going to be how many innings he throws per game. I think we're getting a lot of like 3 and 4 inning starts, and those as a fantasy owner are just beyond maddening. Like you're like, oh, the Tigers are up 4-1 in the fourth. I wonder, and Rodriguez is out. Or you like look at a box score at night. You're like, oh my gosh, the Tigers won 8-2. I wonder how if Rodriguez got the win, and you're like 4 1/3 and out. And it just, I worry that his pitch count's going to be high. So it's not someone's going to be super efficient. He strikes a lot of guys out, has a little bit of walk issues, although not too bad in the minors. I just think there's going to be a lot of 4 and 5 inning starts. It's going to be really frustrating. So I think that it's going to be good. It's going to be fun, but there's probably fantasy wise, I think we're a year off me being super excited about drafting Rodriguez.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat. Obviously a player I would love to roster, love to have on my team, but it's probably going to be a year off for me. Carlos Carrasco, he had a little bit of a rough go in the first spring training outing and then bounced back a little bit on this day when we're recording on Wednesday. A few strikeouts, I think just one walk, looked good. But again, we're very careful what we're seeing here in spring training, not trying to overanalyze. We just obviously don't know if pitchers are trying out different things and as far as type of pitches and location and just all kinds of things, right? So unless we're seeing something with like an injury or a substantial effective new pitch or in severe increase or huge increase in velocity, we're just really needing to be careful. But Carlos Carrasco is a guy I've been drafting a lot. He's not even really going around here. He's kind of going more like 280, 300, like closer to the 18-20 range, but horrendous ratios last year, but I'm kind of liking Carrasco this season. I don't know how many innings he's going to pitch. I don't want to be too bullish in that regard, but I think he'll be pretty decent this year. And I'm a fan. Where are you with Carrasco?
If he stays at his ADP, I'll have a lot of Carlos Carrasco. I think the key for people is you have to realize that he's just not the same pitcher he used to be, but the price is nowhere near what it used to be either. I mean, it's just, you get him in the 18th, 19th round. I mean, you say Hernandez ratios, it was still under a 4 ERA. The whip was a little bit high at 1.33, but I just like that. I like the swinging strike rate is still there. It's 12.9%. The strikeout rate's 23.5%. It might even go up a little bit that many swinging strikes. You know, his chase rate is really elite, 94th percentile. He has some problem with hard hit balls. You know, there's definitely some issues here, but for where he goes, man, I think that the upside is real. I think the floor is actually pretty decent. He's on a really good team. So, you know, wins is going to be a good thing there. The offense should score some runs. Defense can be pretty good. I really like Carrasco, and mostly for me, it's just an issue. I think he's priced too low.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, that's the term I remember. You remember years ago, I used to call myself like a ratio snob. Like I didn't want anybody on my team that would get an ERA over, you know, give me an ERA over four, which is obviously.
Yeah, except you'd use like 3.25 as your anybody over there is a bum kind of line.
Yeah. Well, last season was the year for that. So
I think it was.
Be some pullback there in that department. Trevor Rogers obviously had the horrendous season. He was not healthy last year. I don't know what to think of him. I think I've clicked the button maybe once or almost did a few times, but a lot of times with the other pitchers in this range and around where he goes, I just haven't been able to pull the trigger on Trevor Rogers. I know you don't do draft champions. You don't play those DCs. So you haven't had that temptation, but where do you think you might be on him come main event season?
Hard guy for me to figure out because he really, really hurt me last year. He was my SP1 in the Vegas main event draft and obviously did not work out well. He looked better when he came back after he was down in the minors. But, man, I mean, everything fell off so hard. K rate was way down. Swinging strike rate down like 3%. I don't know. I worry they have a lot of guys there too. Like, I worry if he starts off slow. Like, I don't think he's a lock to stick in the rotation, which scares me down here. Probably someone that I need to look deeper into and kind of get rid of the scars from last year a little bit. I'm not fully over it yet, but I think there's a few too many guys in this range. Like I know Tyler Malley's moving up, but I like him more than Rogers. I like Carrasco more than Rogers. Hunter Brown's moving up too much. They're not really in the same range. I'm probably just going to pass just because I don't know, and I hate taking guys that are this much of an unknown. I understand there's a real upside here. I mean, 2021 was really, really good. This is probably a spot where he's worth taking a risk on, but it's probably not going to be by me.
And what about his teammate, Edward Cabrera? He's someone I had been out on for the first couple of months just because I'm kind of a Garrett guy, Braxton Garrett fan. But Edward Cabrera, he's electric, man. He throws heat. He throws that 96, 97 mile per hour fastball. He's got a solid four-pitch mix. I know he came into camp a little overweight. It was really not that big of a deal. He's been looking good so far, but he looks like he's going to edge out. I think some people don't even think it's a competition, but basically get that five spot. But where are you with him? And then, of course, there's the possibility of, you know, say Braxton Garrett starts off in AAA. If one of Edward Cabrera or Trevor Rogers get hurt or some have some sort of issue, Garrett can come up and pitch for them. But where are you with Edward Cabrera in relation to Trevor Rogers?
Yeah, I mean, I like Braxton Garrett too. I was kind of bummed out he's not gonna get a shot. Although the way you said it well, like if Rogers struggles or Cabrera, someone gets hurt, he could be up quick. But I did like him. Got to move him down because it looks like he's probably not going to win the job. And Cabrera's going to. I think feel like Cabrera is really fully priced though. His ADP in the last couple of weeks is 225. That's like a mid round pick. That's like the 15th round right there on a 15 teamer. I'm literally the guy. The stuff is electric. I mean, he can clearly punch guys out. I am really, really scared of the walks. He was an over 11% walk guy last year. I hate walk guys. I think it really affects your whip. And you look at his BABIP last year. Everybody's like, oh, 301, 107 ratio is really good. His BABIP last year was 207. His left on base rate was 86%. Those are both going to move the opposite directions. Those are not going to be as good as they are. I think we're looking at more of a 4 ERA guy with a bunch of strikeouts than a 3 ERA guy. And I think the whip's going to be too high for me to take in this range.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. So now let's look at just guys that are going basically from round 18 on in 15 teamers in main events, just guys that stick out, that stand out. I think one that is not a surprise, and you know him well, I think you may like him as well, but I'm also a fan of Ross Stripling. I think we kind of know that the cheap or affordable San Francisco pitcher is always it's usually a good bet because of the ballpark and the defense there. But I'm a big Stripling fan. I think, you know, obviously it was a little fortunate with his ratios last season, his ERA in particular there in the AL East. But man, he's heading to a whole new ballpark here. Solid walk rate, under 4%. Not a big strikeout guy, but not a really big deal. But so I'm into Ross Stripling. And then I still have question marks about Sean Manaea. So you know him well, and I want to hear your take on this. But I don't know, man. I know he's just one of those electric guys that, man, he could crush, man. High fly ball rate, lots of home runs. Like, that home run rate was insane last year. Like, I'm legitimately scared of Sean Manaea in two ways. In fact, in the fact that he could burn me if I don't take him and just have that amazing kind of breakout year in the new park. Or if I do draft him, he just absolutely annihilates me. So I'm a little scared. I'm in two different camps with Stripling, who I like, and Manaea, who I just can't figure out.
It's funny. We did not plan this beforehand, but I really like Ross Stripling too. I mean, I think there's a you're kind of taking a leap of faith here that the walk rate from 2022 carries over. Because if it does, you know, that really is, that's a huge whip help. But his walk, like what you said, you said was under 4%. But the other thing I like is the swinging strike rate went up. It was 7% in 2020, then 9.8% in 2021, 11% last year. Like, that's a number we can work with a little bit. I know he's not a big strikeout guy, but that's a number that maybe, if he jumps up the strikeout rate to 22%, 23%, something like that, he becomes really interesting really quickly. The move to San Francisco from Toronto was obviously a good one too, getting out of the AL East. I know there's a balanced schedules here, but still getting in Pac Bell / Oracle / AT&T, whatever the heck the Giants call it these days. But the ADP is 290. I feel like he's a really nice floor guy there with a little bit of upside. I do like that. Sean Manaea is impossible, man. I think it all depends on velocity. I know he went to Driveline, to use the famous, you know, the quote that's on Twitter 9,000 times a day now. But for me, it's all about velocity with him. He's a different guy when he's at 93 versus he was at 91. I've watched him a lot over the year with the A's. I just think that there's too much blow up ability, if that's a word. Every time I think he's kind of turned a corner, he gives up a bunch of runs in a game. I don't think he's as bad as he was last year. Last year was really bad. 4.9 and a 1.3 whip in a year where there's a lot of good pitching. I just think he gives up too much hard contact, and I think the velocity is not going to be real. And if it drops a little bit, he becomes really hittable really quickly.
Want to ask you also about Zach Eflin, because I think you and I know we've talked a lot about him over the years. You've seen me buy in and it not pay off on him. And now all of a sudden, he goes to Tampa Bay, and I'm not in. I don't think it's that I'm not in. I just am ending up landing on different pitchers. Obviously, Tampa Bay usually knows what they're doing. But man, Eflin just, you know, he never really has post those elite ratios. Not like a monster strikeout guy, and can never stay healthy. So I'm hoping he can reinvigorate himself there. One of our NFBC friends or guys on Twitter, Rube Baker, man, he posted that he thinks Zach Eflin finishes as a top 25 starting pitcher. Wow. It's obviously the favorable home park, much better defense, nasty curveball usage, hopefully increasing his strikeout rates. Basically, that the Rays know what they're doing with Zach Eflin. I'd love to see it. I'd love to buy in on it, but I'm not sure quite how I feel about him.
The Rays do know what they're doing, and that's a strong argument. I don't really see a ton here. Everything's kind of falling. Strikeout rate fell. Swinging strike rate fell last year, too. He feels to me like just a guy. Like, if you want to grab him here and kind of take some faith in the Rays, I don't have a problem with the ADPs far enough down here that if he's just kind of a guy, he's not going to hurt you. You could throw him for some home starts. So I'm just kind of neutral on him. I don't have a super strong take. I think that he's fine here. Not someone I'm targeting, not someone I'm fading. If I'm in a spot here, maybe he slips a little bit and I need a pitcher. I think he's fine. I'm just kind of neutral on him. I wish I had a hotter take on him. But, you know, some guys just kind of feel the ADP is just about right. And Eflin's kind of one of those guys.
All right, I'm going to throw you a quick game on the spot. I just thought of this. Buy, sell, and hold.
Oh, boy.
And the three names are Aaron Civale, Ranger Suarez, and Taiwan Walker. I can go first if you want.
Yeah, please do, because I might go. I might be sell.
I like Ranger Suarez. There's just something about that 2021 season where just everything went right. I understand that he had basically the best lineup of matchups of all time. I think he faced like the Pirates twice and the Reds and the Diamondbacks, like all the worst teams, and basically pitched to like a 1.5 ERA over like the last, I think, 9, 10, or 8 weeks of the season. Not a big strikeout guy necessarily. And then last year, his season was just sort of screwed over with a delay in terms of getting his visa and getting back over, getting back to the States. But he's just one of those guys with a very extremely high ground ball rate, 56% the last two seasons. I think at some point, you know, Harper gets back, hopefully, and just this offense just provides some run support. I think they have a decent defense. So I'm kind of buying on Ranger Suarez, even though he isn't necessarily a big, sexy guy. I'm not selling any of these guys, to be honest, which is funny. I do like Civale. I don't think as much as Ranger Suarez, but obviously the home park there in Cleveland is solid. I think when he's healthy, he pitches well, has basically, he's a decent walk rate guy between 5-6%. Most of the damage last season on Civale came in those first few starts in April where he just wasn't really healthy. Spent some time in the IL, came back and pretty much dominated the rest of the season. So I kind of like Civale. And then Taijuan Walker, just another Philly guy there. I don't think he's like the vintage guy of old. I think I like him third on this list of guys. But again, decent walk rate, over 7% last year for the first time since 2016. I think you'll get like 25, 30 starts with an ERA somewhere around 3.5 to 3.8. Not a high strikeout rate, but he's decent. These are just kind of like lineup fillers, like those three guys, Justin Steele. I'm not opposed to drafting some of these sort of mediocre late round arms.
I had Suarez last year and he scares me a little bit because he doesn't strike guys out and he does walk guys, like just a rough combo. He has to keep avoiding hard contact. If he could do that, he could work. He was really good at it last year. He was over 70th percentile hard hit, over 60th percentile in avoiding barrels. And the ground ball tilt you mentioned is a really important one. It's 56%. So I'm probably a hold on Suarez. I'm a hold on Civale. I'm a sell on Walker. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to buy Roansy Contreras in this range. So I'm going to just add someone to the list here. I like Contreras. I think that, the K's did not translate to the major league level last year, but swing strike rate was really good. 12.5%. He was a huge strikeout guy in both AA and AAA last year. So I think there's a lot of times when a pitcher comes up that first time through, you see it with hitters too. They strike out a bunch. It's just tough that first time through. The walks are an issue, but he's like one correction of command away from being really, really good. Throws 96. He has, the StatCast page is rough, too much hard contact pitcher, but he was a rookie. Slider is a 42% whiff rate pitch, really nasty there. There's not much of a floor with Contreras, but I think of these guys, he's got the most upside. So it might be a team build thing. Like those other guys you mentioned have a better floor for sure, but I just think Contreras has a sexier upside. And, in the 20th round, if my team is built in a way that I like it, I think I'm going to take a shot on him above those other three guys.
And now let's finish things off with a few of the helium guys and just anyone really that sticks out to you guys that are typically going starting pitchers after pick 300. So some of the helium guys to me, at least so it seems, are Hayden Wesneski of the Cubs, should he win that five spot, Kyle Bradish of Baltimore. You've got Mackenzie Gore who I think I'm back in on, Brandon Fatt, who's not even guaranteed to win a spot in the Diamondbacks rotation. He could start in AAA. But those to me seem like the sort of the biggest helium guys and just the guys that people aren't necessarily interested in, but I think maybe a few savvy sage NFBC veterans are kind of like, chomping at the bit like, oh yeah, I'm going to get me some value. Those are the guys like Steven Matz or Jose Urquidy or maybe an Eduardo Rodriguez bounce back or like a Michael Walker in San Diego or Alex Wood in San Francisco. These are almost like two significantly sort of different group of pitchers. What is more your strategy? Are you looking for more of this upside helium guys or do you like sort of the older, safer veterans who can potentially bounce back?
Kind of a mix, but I think the best advice I could give is like get two or three of these guys in like the 18th to the 24th round. Don't wait for those last six rounds because everybody's going to be in on these same guys. Everybody's going to want these names. And you're always going to be like, oh, there's 10 pitchers I still like. They're all going to go in the 21st, 22nd. They're all going to go three or four rounds early. So you're drafting in a main event or even an online championship, maybe these guys are a little bit past those in an OC, but in the main event, like just know that all these guys you like in the 26th, 30th round are all going in the 20th to 25th round. Every single year, every single time, these pitchers are the ones that go early. Brandon Fatt is the key. I mean, he's going to go even higher than that if he gets the rotation. Yeah. He was his double A ratios were rough, but he had a 370 BABIP in double A. And then in triple A, he was 263, 0.99 whip. You just don't see, and he's a high strikeout guy and a low walk guy. You just rarely see that with guys that are this young in the minors. He's going to be flying up if he wins that job. I do like Ken Waldichuk in Oakland. His ADP is in the mid 300s. Good home park. I realize it's a bad team, but he was a big strikeout guy in the minors. 13.5 Ks per nine and 234 innings. Huge swinging strike, numbers. Both his slider and his changeup are over 30% whiff rate in a small sample last year. So I do like him. The other guys that I like, David Peterson in New York, if he wins a job there, he's a guy that had a you know, a lot of strikeouts, and you know, the walks are the issue. If he kind of could tick those down a couple notches, he could be really good too. I kind of like Domingo Germán in New York now that, you know, Frankie Montas done for the year. If you need wins down here, you know, a lot of it's team build. If you let yourself, you know, I got a couple of guys that maybe you got some guys that don't go deep into games, took some guys that, you know, maybe you have a Grayson Rodriguez, a couple guys like that. I think Germán is someone that will pitch into games and get wins for you. So I do like him at the price also.
And one of the other things that you can do is start to look into the rotations. And if you can project where a pitcher may go, remember in NFBC, you need to fill those nine pitcher slots, especially for that first half week. Yeah. And sure, yeah, you can fill in relievers. But also if they're starting pitchers that you're looking at, it could be the difference of a tiebreaker for you, like two guys that you are quite unsure about. And then you look and see, okay, well, Michael Wacha, I mean, the Padres get four games and they're getting the Rockies at home. Okay. Maybe that's a way I might go. Same thing with the Boston Red Sox guys. We don't know how that rotation is going to shake out between Corey Kluber and Whitlock and Tanner Houck, but man, they're getting Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Detroit over the first few weeks. They're possibly some good starts. So I think that's possibly a way to attack it with those late round guys.
And a really key point in there too is we have that half week to start out. There's going to be a lot of teams with three games, which means their four and five stars are throwing two starts the second week. So like if you mm-hmm. can, that 28th, 29th round, if you've got your pitchers covered for the first period, you get a couple of those guys that are going to be two-step pitchers the next week. Like those are the people that are going to be in fab. You can jump that. You don't have to spend money in fab. You can put them on your bench. You want those guys that suddenly you're getting some strikeout and win opportunities. There's going to be a lot of four and five stars that throw twice that second week. There's going to be no studs throwing twice the second week because they're all pitching, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So if you can get those four or five starters, you might be able to sneak in a couple starts that second week.
My friend, I cannot wait to head down to Vegas with you. Talk along the way, plan everything out, and just get there, man. Just draft. There's nothing like those live events. I really can't wait for it. The most amazing time of the year. Anything you want to leave the listeners with, or anything that you are promoting, or any final words?
No, not too much. First of all, I appreciate you having me on. It's always always fun to chat with you, and it was really good. And I think we covered a lot of interesting pitchers here. I do the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast on Sunday nights. If you're in the East Coast, it tends to be more of a Monday morning thing. We tape about 8 o'clock on Pacific time. Me and Jeff Erickson, we've done that for years. So if you could get away and listen to that, we do appreciate that. Other than that, that's all I've got to promote. I want to thank you for having me on. It was fun.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much. For my good friend Scott Jenstadt stepping in for Matthew Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.